At length the jays arrive, whose discordant screams were heard long before, as they were warily making their approach an eighth of a mile off, and in a stealthy and sneaking manner they flit from tree to tree, nearer and nearer, and pick up the kernels which the squirrels have dropped. Then, sitting on a pitch pine bough, they attempt to swallow in their haste a kernel which is too big for their throats, and chokes them. And after great labor, they disgorge it, and spend an hour in the endeavor to crack it by repeated blows with their bills. They were manifestly thieves, and I had not much respect for them. But the squirrels, though at first shy, went to work as if they were taking what was their own. Meanwhile, also came the chickadees in flocks, which, picking up the crumbs the squirrels had dropped, flew to the nearest twig, and, placing them under their claws, hammered away at them with their little bills, as if it were an insect in the bark, till they were sufficiently reduced for their slender throats. A little flock of titmice came daily to pick a dinner out of my woodpile, or the crumbs at my door, with faint, flitting, lisping notes, like the tinkling of icicles in the grass, or else with sprightly day, 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 or more rarely, in spring-like days, a wiry, summery Phoebe from the woodside. They were so familiar that at length one alighted on an armful of wood which I was carrying in and pecked at the sticks without fear. I once had a sparrow alight upon my shoulder for a moment while I was hoeing in a village garden, and I felt that I was more distinguished by that circumstance than I should have been by any epaulet I could have worn. The squirrels also grew, at last, to be quite familiar, and occasionally stepped upon my shoe when that was the nearest way. Leave open his prison doors, why the judge does not dismiss his case, why the preacher does not dismiss his congregation. It is because they do not accept the pardon which is freely offered to all.
Oh.
the faint silvery warblings from the bluebird, the song sparrow, and the redwing, as if the last flakes of winter tinkled as they fell. The brooks sing carols and glees to the spring. The marsh hawk sailing low over the meadow, the sinking sound of melting snow is heard in all dells, and the ice dissolves apace in the ponds. The grass flames up on the hillsides like a spring fire, as if the earth sent forth an inward heat to greet the returning sun. Not yellow, but green is the color of its flame. The symbol of perpetual youth, the grass blade, like a long green ribbon, streams from the sod into the summer. I found myself suddenly neighbor to the birds, not by having imprisoned one, but having caged myself near them. I was not only nearer to some of those which commonly frequent the garden and the orchard, but to those wilder and more thrilling songsters of the forest which never or rarely serenade a villager. The wood thrush, the veery, the scarlet tanager, the field sparrow, the whippoorwill, and many others. We are wont to forget that the sun looks on our cultivated fields and on the prairies and forests without distinction. They all reflect and absorb his rays alike, and the former make but a small part of the glorious picture which he beholds in his daily course. In his view, the earth is all equally cultivated like a garden. Therefore, we should receive the benefit of his light and heat with a corresponding trust and magnanimity.
Oh.
could not but notice some of the peculiarities of my visitors. Girls and boys and young women generally seemed glad to be in the woods. They looked in the pond and at the flowers and improved their time. Men of business, even farmers, thought only of solitude and employment, and of the great distance at which I dwelt from something or other. And though they said that they loved a ramble in the woods occasionally, it was obvious that they did not. Restless, committed men, whose time was all taken up in getting a living or keeping it, ministers who spoke of God as if they enjoyed a monopoly of the subject, who could not bear all kinds of opinions, doctors, lawyers, uneasy housekeepers who pried into my cupboard and bed when I was out. The earth is living poetry, like the leaves of a tree, which precede flowers and fruit. Not a fossil earth, but a living earth. The earth is not a mere fragment of dead history, stratum upon stratum, like the leaves of a book, to be studied by geologists and antiquaries, but living poetry, like the leaves of a tree.
Oh,
Strange that so few ever come to the woods to see how the pine tree lives and grows and spires, lifting its evergreen arms to the light, to see its perfect success. But most are content to behold it in the shape of many broad boards brought to market, and deem that its true success. Every creature is better alive than dead, men and moose and pine trees, and he who understands it aright will rather preserve its life than destroy it. I have a commonplace book for fact and another for poetry, but I find it difficult always to preserve the vague distinctions which I had in mind, for the most interesting and beautiful facts are so much the more poetry, and that is their success. They are translated from earth to heaven. I see that if my facts were sufficiently vital and significant, perhaps transmuted into the substance of the human mind, I should need but one book of poetry to contain them all. Canst thou love with thy mind and reason with thy heart? Canst thou be kind and from thy darling depart? Canst thou range earth, sea, and air, and so meet me everywhere? Through all events I will pursue thee, through all persons I will woo thee.
Oh,
But I would say to my fellows, once for all, as long as possible, live free and uncommitted. It makes but little difference whether you are committed to a farm or the county jail. I would not have anyone adopt my mode of living on any account, for, besides that, before he has fairly learned it, I may have found out another for myself. I desire that there be as many different persons in the world as possible. But I would have each one be very careful to find out and pursue his own way, and not his father's or his mother's or his neighbor's instead. No face which we can give to a matter will stead us so well at last as the truth. In sane moments, we regard only the facts, the case that is. Say what you have to say, not what you ought. Any truth is better than make-believe. Shams and delusions are esteemed for soundest truths, while reality is fabulous. If men would steadily observe realities only, and not allow themselves to be deluded, life would be like a fairy tale. When we are unhurried and wise, we perceive that only great and worthy things have any permanent and absolute existence, that petty fears and petty pleasures are but the shadow of the reality. I feel that I draw nearest to understanding the great secret of my life in my closest intercourse with nature. There is a reality and health in present nature, which is not to be found in any religion and cannot be contemplated in antiquity. I suppose that what in other men is religion is in me love of nature. Men esteem truth remote, in the outskirts of the system, behind the furthest star, before Adam and after the last man. But all these times and places and occasions are now and here, and we are enabled to apprehend at all what is sublime and noble only by the perpetual instilling and drenching of the reality that surrounds us. We must learn to reawaken and keep ourselves awake, not by mechanical aids, but by an infinite expectation of the dawn. It is something to be able to paint a particular picture or to carve a statue, but it is far more glorious to carve and paint the very atmosphere and medium through which we look. To affect the quality of the day, that is the highest of arts. I left the woods for as good a reason as I went there. Perhaps it seemed to me that I had several more lives to live and could not spare any more time for that one. It is remarkable how easily and insensibly we fall into a particular route and make a beaten track for ourselves. I learned this, at least, by my experiment, that if one advances confidently in the direction of his dreams and endeavors to live the life which he has imagined, he will meet with a success unexpected in common hours. He will put some things behind, will pass an invisible boundary. New, universal, and more liberal laws will begin to establish themselves around and within him, or the old laws be expanded and interpreted in his favor in a more liberal sense, and he will live with the license of a higher order of beings. In proportion as he simplifies his life, the laws of the universe will appear less complex, and solitude will not be solitude, nor poverty, poverty, nor weakness, weakness. If you have built castles in the air, your work need not be lost. That is where they should be. Now, put the foundations under them.